It's time to go deep for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love. This is Preds Insiders with your host, Robbie Stanley.
Brought to you by Dr. Kelly Rice.
On your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
1025.
And welcome into Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Brought to you by Dr. Kelly Rice. For all your dental or sleep apnea needs, visit KellyERice.com. Robbie Stanley here with you on this Monday night in Nashville, Tennessee. Big week upcoming for the Nashville Predators. We'll get into that a little bit more later in the show. Bit of a strange week for the Predators this week. You lose to Seattle on Wednesday. You follow that up with a really big win on Saturday against the Sharks. We'll have Paul Skrbina on from the Tennessean later this hour to discuss all things Nashville Predators, 2 weeks away from the trade deadline today as well. So things about to get real hot and heavy for the Nashville Predators, both in the playoff race and with the deadline coming up as well. It's been an interesting week. I thought the game on Wednesday, they had the late start on Wednesday against Seattle. You're on TNT. It's a nationally televised game. You're coming off this big week last week from the stadium series and Pecorine's jersey retirement and all these things. And I thought, maybe a week that could springboard you forward here as you move ahead into the playoff stretch coming up. I thought the Predators were really bad on Wednesday. And, they started off okay, and obviously you get a 2-0 lead, you're feeling good. But really from the start in that game, the puck execution really wasn't there, and I just thought they were sloppy on Wednesday against Seattle. You give up the shorthanded goal in the third period, you lose 4-3 to the Kraken, just leaves a bad taste in your mouth, and you could tell John Hines wasn't happy after that game, nor should he have been. I just thought it was a really bad performance by the Predators, maybe their worst performance of the year last Wednesday against the Kraken, and I was really interested to see, okay, well, you have one of those. That's going to happen at some point throughout the season where you have performances that you're not proud of. How do you respond from that? How do you build from that? Because at that point, you're talking about a team that had lost six of their previous eight games coming out of the All-Star break, heading into San Jose on Saturday night. How would they respond? And respond, did they ever? They win 8-0 on Saturday night against San Jose. Now, look, obviously San Jose is not a very good team. I don't think there's any question about that. Alex Stalock was in goal. There were a lot of ingredients heading into that game that made me feel pretty confident that the Predators were going to win that game. I did not see an 8-0 win coming, and I certainly did not see the performance from the fourth line coming that we got. Matt Luff with 3 points in that game, 2 goals and an assist. Michael McCarron with 4 points, 2 goals and 2 assists in that game. And Philip Tomasino got in on the action as well. 3 assists for Philip Tomasino. So you're talking about a fourth line that is just, it was just dynamic for you on Saturday in the game. And obviously, that's not something that you can expect on a nightly basis from the fourth line as they move forward here. But, man, what a statement from those guys. It was interesting, the lineup shuffles that they did. On Wednesday against the Kraken, they moved Colton Sisson's line around a little bit. So, Janot started up on a line with Johansson. They moved Matt Luff to the third line with Trennan and with Sisson's. And you could just tell it wasn't the same. The effectiveness of that herd line was not the same without Tanner Janot. John Hines came on Robbie and Rex Road on Friday and, talked about how he just didn't really like that and did not like the results that we saw. So I knew there was probably a pretty good chance that Janot was going to be reunited with Sissons and Trennan on Saturday, and of course he was. The line that's been really productive all season long from start to finish so far when everyone's been healthy and available has been the Granlund line with Forsberg and Duchesne. And Duchesne has been on a roll as of late. He continued that on Saturday. But they switched that line around and brought up Forsberg with Johansson and Duchesne. So a bit of a kind of a throwback look to the playoff series last year against Carolina. And it paid off. Matt Duchesne, 2 goals the other night. I thought that line looked dangerous. Ryan Johansson in the game finishes with an assist. And Philip Forsberg has an assist in the game. And I know the power play has been part of their success as well. But I thought Duchesne was awesome the other night. The second goal that he scored was just a beautiful goal. It's a highlight reel play, a stretch pass up to the zone. Johansson kind of leads him in stride there, and Duchesne with a great forehand to backhand move that he roofs. Just a great goal. 27 goals now in the season for Matt Duchesne. He is tied with Philip Forsberg for the most goals on the team. I was interested to see that they moved those two up there with Ryan Johansson, and you know, how long do you keep it together? You just had an 8-goal game. You know what you have in the Granlund, Forsberg, Duchesne line. You can put it back together at any time. You move Tolvanen up there with Granlund alongside Luke Cunnan as well. I'm interested to see what this looks like as they move forward here and whether or not maybe you give a longer-term look to Forsberg, Johansson, and Duchesne. You know, at some point, you're going to have to find somebody in your top six that can play, whether that's with Mikael Granlund or Ryan Johansson. Like, obviously, when you have Forsberg and Duchesne on your line with the way those two are going this year, that line's going to be successful. Can you find other players in the top six that could come in and fill that role? That's going to be the question as they move forward here. And I think the Predators are still searching for that. But, man, what a performance from the Predators on Saturday. You win 8-0 in that game, and that sets up a massive week this week at Bridgestone Arena. You've got the Stars coming in on Tuesday, the Ducks on Thursday, St. Louis on Saturday, a little morning hockey coming up at Bridgestone Arena on Saturday before going on the road to take on the Wild, who have been struggling as of late on Sunday. So this is a massive week. You look at the standings right now, this is heading into play tonight. The Stars are 1 point up on you with 67 points with 55 games played. Minnesota, 1 point up on you as well. The Ducks, 3 points behind you. The Oilers, 2 points behind you. I mean, the Predators are right in the thick of things right now when it comes to the playoff race. They're the second wild card team at the moment. And look, this is gonna change. This is gonna, you know, shift and shuffle several different times as the season comes down the stretch here. But the Predators are right in the thick of it, and this week is a big week. You got 3 of the 4 at home, which you feel good about. It's a good thing to have that. You got to go out and take advantage of that if you're the Predators. The Stars have been red hot as of late. The Predators saw them last week. Got a big win in a shootout against them last week. It would be nice to get, you know, 2 points again against them, but it would really be nice to do it in regulation as well. So this is a massive week for the Nashville Predators. They've got to find a way to continue to roll here. I mean, look, Minnesota, as of a few weeks ago, you thought, man, it's going to be difficult for the Predators to catch them. They had more points than the Predators in the standings. At that point, they also had 5 games in hand on the Predators. Well, that's probably the biggest part of what's transpired over the course of the last couple of weeks. You know, with teams playing and the Predators not having very taxing of a schedule the last couple of weeks, the games played part of it has caught up. So now Dallas is dead even with you with 55 games played. The Oilers and the Ducks, every team in the Pacific other than Calgary that's in contention, have played more games than the Predators at this point. Minnesota at 54 games. So what was a 5-game-in-hand lead that the Wild had on you is now down to 1, and you're 1 point back of them. St. Louis has struggled as of late. They've lost 3 in a row. They're at 55 games played. So, and you're only, doing some quick math, 5 points behind them. So you're right there in the thick of things now, not only the wild card spots in the Western Conference, but all of a sudden, second place in the Central, third place in the Central, finishing in one of those top three spots, you're in the mix for that again. So while things have not gone overly well for the Predators as of late, you know, losing 6 out of the 9 games that you've had since the All-Star break, you're still right in the thick of it. The problem is now there's back pressure. You've got the Stars. You've got Edmonton. You've got Anaheim. Vancouver has been playing better since Bruce Boudreau took over as head coach. So there are more teams right behind you there. Winnipeg with a tough loss the other night, which, you know, you're at 56 games, 58 points. They're 8 points back of the Preds right now. They're not on life support, but it's go time for the Winnipeg Jets. So you got to continue to win these games if you're the Predators and keep some distance between you and the other teams behind you while trying to gain some ground on. Look, depending on how this week goes, let's say you have a really good week and you beat Dallas and Anaheim and you get, you know, 2 out of 4 points against St. Louis and Minnesota. You end this week with 6 out of a possible 8 points. All of a sudden, you could be in third place in the Central. You could be staring down second place in the Central Division. This is a massive week for the Predators, and this will be the last time that you see the Dallas Stars this year as well. So, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, the playoff spots and where you finish in the wild card race in the division is going to all come down to tomorrow between the Predators and the Stars. But with it being the last time you see them in the regular season, it would be nice to come away with 2 points and to be able to get that done in regulation tomorrow against the Stars. So we'll see if the Predators can handle that portion of it as well. Good to see UC Soros get a shutout the other night as well. I know that, you know, San Jose didn't generate all that much. They finished with 20 shots on goal, and the Predators had the puck for most of the night, and, You score 8 goals. Sometimes that game just gets a little wacky. I think Saros has played well as of late. I think the defense in front of him at times, I mean, go back and look at that Seattle game. Some of the defense was atrocious. So the numbers haven't looked great for UC Saros as of late. I think he's played better than his numbers would suggest. I thought it was cool to see him rewarded with a shutout the other night, the third shutout of the season for UC Saros. So good to see him on that front. Obviously, he's going to be crucial for the Predators as they go down the stretch here, as will David Rittich. We now reach the portion of the schedule where the rest is really a thing of the past for the Predators. Starting tomorrow against Dallas, I mean, you're playing basically every other day for the next little bit here, and that's going to be the case throughout the month of March, and will be the case throughout the month of April as well as you make your playoff push. So lots of hockey coming up for the Predators in not very many days, and we'll see if they have what it takes to sustain it, to make a push coming down the stretch here to get into the playoffs. And if that happens, we'll see what sort of damage they can do once playoff time comes around. When we come back, we'll be joined by Paul Skrbina from the Tennessee, and he does a great job covering the Nashville Predators. We'll get his thoughts on this team, the trade deadline coming up in 2 weeks. What should the Predators do with Philip Forsberg, and what are the chances this team could make a deep run in the playoffs? We'll get into all that and more coming up with Paul Skrbina on the other side. You're listening to Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in Paul Skrbina from the Tennessean. Paul, thanks for taking time to join us this evening, man. What's going on?
Good evening, or good morning, or whatever it is. How you doing?
Yeah, we are doing great. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. So, Paul, lots to get to with the Predators. The trade deadline is 2 weeks away from today. We'll get into the Philip Forsberg side of that coming up here in just a few minutes. But first, let's just start with your reaction to the butt-kicking that the Predators delivered to the San Jose Sharks on Saturday. 8-0, the final score. I thought they were pretty bad last week against Seattle. Responded pretty well against San Jose. What did you make of not only the margin of victory, but guys like Michael McCarron and Matt Luff scoring the goals the other night?
But better than that was their reaction after the game. They were giggling like little kids at a playground. Here's the thing, Rob. This team this year, like you said, they didn't play very well against Seattle. In years, recent years past, at least since I've been here, it seems like they didn't respond well to that. This whole season, the last half of last season, those kind of losses don't get this team down. And, those 8-0 games are going to happen. You need them once in a while. I think you need them both ways once in a while. I mean, it's kind of an anomaly. But it is kind of cool to see some of the other guys, get to contribute who aren't maybe the marquee names all the time, at least on the score sheet.
Yeah, I thought for sure. And Roman Josi, 4 assists the other night. He was a +6. I usually don't pay much attention to the plus-minus stuff. But when you're a +6, I start to maybe pay attention to that a little bit. And it's pretty good. He's got 59 points in 50. Yeah, I'd say it's pretty incredible what he was able to do tonight. He's got 59 points in 53 games this year as a defenseman, which is just absurd. And you've watched a lot of good players over the course of your career, obviously Duncan Keith and Patrick Kane. And you can go up and down the list of guys that you've watched that are really, really good players. When you watch Roman Josi on a nightly basis, what comes to mind for you?
I think he's so naturally good that you almost don't notice how good he is. Unless you're specifically watching him, you just kind of expect that quality every single night, and he does it just about every single game. I mean, he doesn't make very many mistakes. He doesn't hardly ever hurt his team. So you take it for granted a little bit.
Yeah.
It's easy to do because you're just so used to it. But if you really examine it, if you watch him closely, and I've done this on several occasions where, especially when we were traveling, some games you get bored, you're like, all right, I'm just going to watch this one guy the whole game. And, I've done that with him several times, and it's just the things that he does, he sees the game, I think, in a way that 99.9% of other players just don't. He sees things other people don't. And, you kind of take it for granted, but he's certainly a Norris Trophy contender. He's having a better season than the season that he won it. We'll see how those awards go after the season, but he's definitely, has to be considered, and he's by far and away, the team's best player, skater. And in my opinion, we'll go down as the best player in franchise history when all is said and done.
Yeah, I think he's certainly on that track, no question about it. Paul Skrbina on the line with us from the Tennessee. And, Paul, as I said, we are 2 weeks away from the day to the NHL trade deadline. Philip Forsberg still under contract negotiations between his side and the Predators at this point. What's kind of your thought, your read on the Forsberg situation? And let's just say the Predators, you get, you know, a day or two before the deadline and he's not signed to this point. How much consideration, if you're David Poile, are you giving to trading Philip Forsberg here in a couple weeks?
Let me start out by saying this. I think he'll re-sign. I think it's the Predators can afford it, and you know, the season that he's having, he's finally proving to be, you know, reach the potential that he's shown in the past. Objectively, I think if I'm David Poile, which I'm not, but objectively, I think if you know it's going to be impossible to sign him and the deadline's coming, I think business-wise, you have to trade him. But I don't think that that's always the way things operate. You know, I think you're never going to get more for him than you can right now, and you risk losing him for nothing. You know, but the flip side of it is, you know, there's the loyalty, there's the fact that, you know, the Predators are competitive this season. So, you know, trading away your best offensive player doesn't really look all that great in the middle of a season where you're competing, which I didn't think a lot of people expected him to do. I think that complicates things a lot. My gut tells me, though, I think he's gonna stay here.
Yeah, I kind of have similar feelings. Like, I think at some point it's going to get worked out. I guess my question for him would be, and I'll throw this out there to you as well, like, I think there was pretty clearly some frustration on his part heading into the year with some moves that were made. Like, obviously, he wasn't a fan of Victor Arvidsson being traded away, and he lost Cale Yarncroke in the expansion draft, and Ryan Ellis got traded away. I'd be interested to know, from his standpoint and from your standpoint, like, how much the window for this team, whatever phrase you want to call it, the potential in the short and long term for this team has changed based on what we've seen this year. Like, how much more, I guess, differently do you view the Predators now than you did when they were coming into the season this year?
180 degrees difference, and I think that makes all the difference in the world when it comes to Forsberg. Because my thought always was, that's great. The Predators are going to want to re-sign him, and they'll probably overpay him. Or not overpay him, but it's probably going to be one of those contracts where it's not going to be pretty at the end of the contract. But here's the thing. That was everybody assuming that he was going to want to stay here with an uncertain future with the team, you know, and now that we kind of see, I know the word's thrown around a lot, the identity of this team has established a clear, I mean, there's enough of a sample size going back to the second half of last season that we know what the Predators are now, right? We know what to kind of expect from them. Excuse me. And I think that could have a lot to do with Philip decide, you know, because Philip could very easily go somewhere for more money and go to a competitor in the short term or in the long term. But you know, I think he's comfortable here. I think he's having success here. He's had success here, and you know, I think them winning has everything to do with it. I don't know that he would have been wanting to stick around if they were going to be, you know, rebuilding for the next two or three seasons or whatever it may be. Because those are the prime seasons of his career. He doesn't want to spend them, you know, with a team that's obviously not going to compete. But, you know, I think that changed everything.
Well, and to that point, Paul, I mean, you've got Ryan Johansson playing well this year. Matt Duchene has 27 goals now this year. He and Forsberg are tied atop the goal lead for the Predators with 27 goals. My question for you is, as you watch Duchene continue to play this year, to me, like, he just is what he is at this point. He's a good player this year, and I don't expect that to change at any point throughout the rest of this season. Why do you think it's been so dramatically different with his case in particular in terms of just the production? He's just oozing confidence to me out there. Why do you think it's been so dramatically different with him, and how much more differently do you view his contract now that he's playing the way that he is?
Well, first of all, I've said since both of those guys have had good seasons after the last two horrible seasons for both of them, that was like the equivalent of the Predators signing two free agents for nothing because they're already paying them.
Yeah.
Two big free agents, you know, or at least gaining two free agents on their roster for nothing. So, I mean, that's huge. I think with Duchene, a lot of it has to do with who he's playing with and where he's playing and how. I think John Hines, it took a little while for John to figure out how to best get the maximum out of Duchene. Duchesne's been used to playing with, you know, if you look at his career, I mean, he's put up great offensive numbers, and I thought the contract was a little bit high when they signed him. But, you know, he's a guy that Poyle's always wanted, and I thought, well, you know, here comes another offensive player to Nashville that maybe, you know, they don't have a great history of bringing great offensive players here and sustaining that success. But I think with all that's kind of changed under John, and I give John a lot of credit, you know, for getting those guys to you know, John's not afraid to, you know, he sat Duchesne and took him off the power play last year. You know, yeah. Like he's not afraid to go up to these guys with bigger contracts and tell them, hey, you're not earning it. Sit down. And over time, guys get mad about that and they cry about that or they get upset about that. But then over time, they start to respect that, right? And these guys all want to – look, I don't care how much money you make. You know, every single one of these guys in this league wants to be good, right? They want to be great. Sure. Like, they wouldn't be there if they didn't want to. And you know, I think that has a lot to do with Duchesne's turnaround. And I think Johansson was just, I mean, he's a little more versatile because Duchesne in his career has always played with guys who, you know, really good players around him. Like, he produces when he has really good players around him. And I kind of look at Ryan Johansson. He's had great players around him too, but I look at Ryan Johansson as he can be more of a driver and make players around him better. More so than maybe Duchesne can. I'm not looking at deep diving in analytics or anything.
No, I agree with you.
But I just think, you know, so Ryan, he's a little more versatile, and you can put different guys around him, and he can produce. I just think the last two seasons, you know, there's a million reasons why guys have a down season or two. You know, it could be personal. It could be just, you know, bad luck. It could be a lot of things. And again, you know, people look at him, and he gets this reputation of, you know, well, he's whatever people think of him. Look, the guy, you know, the guy, again, like everybody else, he wants to be really good. Don't think these guys, they make $8 million a year. They're not giving the money back, but they want to earn it. I mean, believe me, you know, I've been doing this long enough to know that, you know, these guys, they care. And, you know, but caring and producing are two different things. But, yeah, those two guys, I mean, so many differences in this team. You know, we haven't even talked about the Tanner Janos and the Yakov Trenins and the, you know, the depth guys. And another guy I mentioned the other night, Robbie, that – since I've been here, it didn't just dawn on me. It dawns on me quite often. Like, somehow Colton Sissons is, like, underappreciated. I don't want to say underrated. I think he's just a little underappreciated for all the things that he does.
Yep.
And, you know, when you have guys like that who know their roles, like, you're going to have success. Are they going to win the Stanley Cup? I don't think so. But, like, could they? It wouldn't shock me. If you told me that before the season, I would tell you there's no way.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, we've seen less talented teams than this Predators team go on deep runs in the playoffs before. I don't think there's any question about that.
No, for sure. I mean, they were the last. They barely got in when they made it to the Cup final.
Yeah.
And you know, look what happened. I mean, and I think this team is built for the postseason. I think they're built for, you know, for those 5 and 7 game series because of that they're just tough. You can't push this team. I always felt like the Predators were really good when I started covering them. I think 4 years ago. Of course, this is my fourth season. And, you know, coming off the Cup run and the two division titles, President's Trophy, all that stuff. But I always felt like you could push them around.
Yeah.
And this team, I don't feel like that. Like, you know, they wear other teams down, like physically, mentally, emotionally, a lot of different ways. And they just keep coming at you. Even if you knock them down, they just keep getting up.
Well, and to that point, Paul, I think it's a great point, and obviously some of it is as simple as just personnel, right? Like, you've got Tanner Janot and Yakov Trenin and just some bigger guys now that play that way. But my question for you is, like, how much credit do you give John Hines for not only the style in which they play, but really the turnaround? Like, as you said, when he first got here, I feel like this team was fragile in a lot of ways, sometimes physically, but really kind of mentally and emotionally too. It felt like when things were going wrong, this team just allowed it to snowball. And I think that was a process for John Hines to dig his way out of it. It's funny to think about, like, about this time a year ago is when they started to turn things around and really start to play better in the second half of the year. Before that, I mean, there was noise about John Hines. There was noise about David Poyle. Oh, it was crazy. I mean, it's loud.
They were they had a less than 1% chance of making the playoffs last season at this, you know, at this time. I give John a lot of the credit. Here's how I kind of look at it, though. I have to give the credit to John and to David Poyle, because I think David has built this roster in conjunction with John, I think they talk a lot. I think John knows what kind of team he wants to have, and David tries to give him that. Now, look, with the expansion draft last year, everyone was surprised that, this person was exposed. And we knew that Seattle wasn't going to take, Ryan Johansson or Duchesne's contract. We knew that wasn't going to happen. But what was interesting was who they did protect. And Tanner Janot was on that list. Very, he had played, 15 games? I don't even know.
It was around there, yeah.
And we're all like, what? Why? I don't get it, And so I give a lot of credit to both of those guys. And I've been praising John. What happened at the second half of last season was nothing short of a miracle. And UC Saros was a huge part. I mean, there's a lot of reasons for it. But I think, to your point, Robbie, I feel like when he took over, and let's not forget, he was here for 2 months before everything was shut down.
Yeah.
And nothing has been quote unquote normal since he's been here, which makes that job in some ways a lot tougher. Because there was a time, there was a long months and months and months where he wasn't even around his team. Here's this new guy coming in, and he can't even be around his guys. And you're not around, as we went into the locker room after the Stadium Series game. That was the first time I've been in the locker room in 2 years.
It felt weird, didn't it?
It felt good. Even though it was kind of modified or whatever. But those two guys, I really, and I think David gives them the pieces, John puts them together. And I think they work together to decide what those pieces are. And I think, I know David hasn't had very many head coaches in his time here. And, he was kind of like, was this going to be a mistake, kind of a thing with John. And I think that they've worked through it and kind of figured each other out and worked well together. And I got to give David credit. I mean, there's times I don't agree with what he does, and that's fine. Comes with the territory. But I really think that it's a combination of those two. That's my short answer to your long question.
Yeah, I did have a very long question there. Paul Skrbina, who are here with us on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, covers the Nashville Predators for the Tennessee. And Paul, last thing for you here. Obviously, this is a massive week for the Predators. You got the Stars coming in and the Ducks and the Blues, and Minnesota's been on a skid as of late. You're traveling to Minnesota on Sunday. Coming down the stretch here, what do you think of the Predators' chances, number one, to get in the playoffs? And you've talked about the identity that they play with. What do you think of their opportunity to maybe do some damage if they get there when it comes down the stretch for this team?
I think the thing that scares me, Robbie, is the games in hand, because I know that's kind of that window, that gap is closing a little bit more. Because there was at one point they had played more games than anybody in the division. So when you got to sit at home and kind of, over the course of time, sit at home and watch other people determine your fate if you don't take care of your business. I think the Predators are going to get in. I think if they get in, they could be very dangerous. I'm not saying they're going to win the Stanley Cup, but I think they could win a series. I think they're going to, and I don't even care who they play. That's the thing. Usually when the NHL playoffs are so strange, because you look and it's all this divisional the first couple rounds. It's like, well, I don't want to play that team. I think the Predators are a team nobody really wants to play.
Yeah.
In a series. And no, they're not on top of the division. Colorado's run away with it like we expected, and St. Louis is really good. But I think like I said earlier, they're just. Their potential in the 5-7 game series is just, they can just wear you out, and they're willing to do it, and I think that can make a difference. So I think they'll make the playoffs, and if they don't make it this year, I think I don't think we're going to see any major moves at the deadline, and I think you're going to have another season with some of these younger guys and these this older established guys that if they continue to play like they're playing, I think they're building toward something, and they're living up to what David Poile rephrased as a competitive transition, and not a rebuild. But I my gut tells me they're going to make the playoffs.
Paul Skrbina from the Tennessean has been our guest here on Preds Insiders. Does a great job covering the Nashville Predators for the Tennessean. Paul, great stuff, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us.
Oh, I appreciate you having me. I look forward to seeing you, Robbie.
Absolutely. We'll come back. We'll react to what Paul had to say there. Take your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. This is Preds Insiders here on ESPN 1025 The Game. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Dr. Kelly Rice. For all your dental or sleep apnea needs, visit KellyERice.com. Robbie Stanley here with you on this Monday evening in Nashville, Tennessee. Thanks to Paul Skrbina from the Tennessean for joining us in the last segment. And one of the things we brought up with Paul was the play of Roman Josi. I think it's almost become old hat at this point. We expect a high-level play out of Roman Josi, but he's got 59 points in 53 games this year as a defenseman. It is absurd what Roman Josi is doing out there right now. And this morning on Robbie and Rex Road, I threw out this question. Are we seeing the best season that we have ever seen in the history of the Nashville Predators from Roman Josi individually? Interesting conversation. Here's what we talked about this morning on Robbie and Rex Road. Joe, I'm going to ask you the question I threw out there to Darren McFarland. Roman Josi has 59 points, 53 games as a defenseman. Keeping in mind, he's already won a Norris Trophy, and I don't think he's going to win one this year, although I think he'll get in the conversation. But Cale Makar is already in the 60s in terms of his points, and you know how sometimes it just feels like a guy's going to win? Like, it feels to me like Cale Makar is going to win. But that's not to take anything away from Roman Josi. But keeping in mind, he's already won a Norris Trophy. Pekka Rinne has won a Vezina Trophy. UC Saros was spectacular last year. He's been spectacular for the most part this year. Paul Kariya has the single-season franchise record for points, which is 85. Right now, Yossi's on pace to beat that. Are we seeing maybe the best season in the history of this franchise from number 59 this year? Because I think you can make an argument that we are.
Yeah, well, and it's Here, let me ask you this. Have you considered the Paul Kariya 05-06 season the greatest season in franchise history? Like if someone asked you that going to the, you know, whenever, you'd be like, oh, yeah, that Paul Kariya season.
Yes, for a long time. Honestly, I would put the Josi season from a couple of years ago right there with it. But, yeah, I mean, Paul Kariya was pretty next level that year. But, if Josi breaks that as a defenseman with 85 points right in a year, like, what are we talking about? Like, it's got to be, right?
Well, and that's also
– I know there's more to the game than points. I get that.
Yes. Yes, no doubt. But, I mean – yeah, it's pretty ridiculous. And, you know, it's interesting because we've talked about this year about Forsberg at different times. Like, wow, he's about to have the best offensive season, you know, in Preds history.
Sure.
As a forward. He's probably going to break the goals record still. I mean, I think Duchesne and Forsberg both going to
– they're tied right now, 27 apiece.
So they're both going to beat Arvidsson's record. And then you have – but, you know, it's some people would say, gosh, but you don't even win the Norris. I mean, why – he won the Norris this other season. Why is this not – but to your point, sometimes you just have bad timing. You have a kid doing ridiculous things, ridiculous numbers for arguably the best team in the league.
Right.
It's hard to beat that.
It is. Now, I'm not saying Roman Josi can't do it because I think he's going to be right there. But, you know, Paul Kariya, 05-06, 85 points. He had 31 goals, 54 assists. Now – Yossi's not obviously going to get 31 goals. If he gets to 20, that's a pretty darn good season as a defenseman.
That's massive.
Yeah. So, yeah. You know, you're talking about if he breaks it, you're probably talking about 19, 20 goals and 60-something assists at that point, which is just absurd.
Absurd.
He's already at 45. So he's going to end up getting 60-something assists this year if he stays healthy. Like, I think this is the greatest season we have ever seen a Nashville Predator have. And I feel like we're not really talking about it that much because to Darren's point, it's like, oh, yeah, it's Roman Josi. It's what he does. But we're watching a guy have, I think, the best season a player on this team has ever had. And you start talking about, you know, greatest players in franchise history. I know that Pekka's number one right now, and it's going to be hard to unseat him, especially at that position, the position he plays. And I'm not saying that Roman Josi is, like, unquestionably going to be the guy one day. But Roman Josi is going to have a whole lot of records with this group when he's done that are going to be very difficult to break. The guy is incredible.
No, he's right in his prime, and does not look like he's slowing down anytime soon. Durable, you know, he's had some concussions, but he really hasn't had too much in the way of injuries.
No.
He's going to stack some more seasons like this. He should, unless he has some bad luck. I mean, right now, Hockey Reference, so, you know, he's tops franchise history in assists per game, 0.85, you know, points per game. Again, these are single season. 1.11, that's tops also. Adjusted assists right now with 66. You know. So again, that's more than Korea had that year. So Korea is on this list. So already he has surpassed his full season there in adjusted assists. So it's pretty ridiculous.
Well, I mean, you're talking about a guy that he very well could end up with 90 points this year as a defenseman. Now, it's going to get, I think, a little bit more difficult to maintain the pace for him just because you're playing a whole lot of games and not very many days. That has a physical toll on you after a while. And also, like, it just is what it is this time of year at the NHL. Once you get closer to the playoffs, it's more difficult to score. It just is. Like, the goals per game go down this time of year. Every team they're clogging up the neutral zone. They're playing as hard as they can play every night. So it's more difficult to generate offense this time of year. But even with that being said, he's the one guy to me that they have. And I would probably, exclude Philip Forsberg from this when he's on. When Philip Forsberg's on, I feel like he can do this too. But Roman Josi on a nightly basis, he can create offense by himself. Like, he doesn't need anybody else out there. He can create space, create offense by himself. And doing that as a defenseman, it's kind of like the Derrick Henry conversation. I hope we're enjoying what we're watching, because this is not normal, what Roman Josi's doing.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah, and I think it is taken for granted more than it should be. He's been so good for so long.
Exactly.
But he's different now.
Yeah. No, this is a different level. And I talked about this earlier this year. He was so good his Norris Trophy year. And we can take the real nerdy route and get into like the deep dive of the analytics and all that stuff. But just basically suffice it to say he was elite, and where he's especially elite is driving offense and carrying the play. Like, he does that way better than any other defenseman in the league. It's not even close. And that's the case again this year. But I feel like he is significantly better this year than he was when he won the Norris Trophy, which is incredible. Now, part of the point production is that he's got 25 points on the power play this year. And we know what the power play has been like around here for a while.
It's actually a good power play.
It's a good power play.
That helps.
So that is helping in terms of the point production. But 5-on-5, you're still talking about a pretty productive season from this guy. It's incredible what he's doing right now. And I think it is. I think we are watching. We spent so much time talking about Duchesne and Forsberg and Johansson and Granlund this year. I think we're watching the best season a player has ever had right in front of us, and we've not talked that much about it. It's incredible.
Yeah, that's a great point. Do you feel like Josi has benefited, because we've talked about this with other players, from the coaching change? It's been 2 years, but
I don't know. It's interesting because
it's a little bit different.
It's interesting to think about that, because the year that Laviolette got fired was also the year that he won the Norris Trophy, right? So he went through both of them and still won the Norris. I think one thing that I will say, I think he deserves credit for, we talk about other players buying in. I think he's bought in too. I think you and I would both agree. First part of last year, he wasn't very good by his standards. I think he was trying to do too much. And I think, it's obvious he can still do a lot for this team. But I think at times last year he was maybe playing outside of himself a little bit. And now he's bought into the system of, all right, I'll carry the puck when I can. When I don't have the lane, I'm giving it to Matt Duchesne, or I'm giving it to Philip Forsberg, or Matt Luff, giving it to Matt Luff like the other night.
Get the puck to
Matt Luff at all costs.
Crying out loud.
So, yes, I think from that standpoint, the system has benefited him. I think what really benefits him is, and I don't know how to put a tangible body of work on this, but teams used to, think back to that Dallas series a couple years ago. They were going after Roman Josi. It was pretty clear. They were coming after him. And there was no answer to that from the Predators. We saw it last week. I think it was Dallas. It was Radek Foxa. He took a run at Josi. Tanner Janot goes over there immediately and gets in a fight. Again, I don't know how to put a tangible number to that, but I think it makes a difference.
Oh, it's got to.
So that was the conversation this morning on Robbie and Rex Road. There's no question that number 59 has been sensational so far this year for the Predators. We'll see if he can keep it going, and we'll see if he has what it takes to break the single-season franchise scoring record for the Predators, which again was set by Paul Kariya back in the 2005-06 season. 85 points for Paul Kariya in that season. So Roman Josi on track to break it. We'll see if he can keep that pace up as the Predators come down the stretch here. When we come back, we'll hear some thoughts from Darren McFarland on the Predators as they move into the stretch run here with March beginning and April coming up on the other side. That's up next. This is Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley here with you. The Preds taking on the Dallas Stars tomorrow at Bridgestone Arena. Puck drop at 7 o'clock. Pre-game at 6 o'clock here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And we talked earlier about the switcheroo that John Hines had on Saturday, moving Forsberg up with Johansson and Duchesne. Obviously, Granlund's line going down. You had Luke Cunningham on the line with him on the right. You had Eli Tolvanen on the left side with Luke Cunningham. So a different look in the top six for the Predators the other night. What do we think of that? And could that be something that John Hines continues to do as the Predators go down the stretch here, putting Johansson more with Forsberg and Duchesne? We asked Darren McFarland about that this morning on Robbie and Rex Road. Here's what Darren had to say on the lineup shuffling that John Hines did on Saturday against San Jose.
Saturday's game did involve a lineup change, which I found was interesting. Obviously, moving Johansson or moving, Forsberg and Duchesne with Johansson. Again, it's a laugher. It's probably something this team needed. I don't know how much you take out of it, but what did you think of that move? Do you think that has staying power?
Well, I wasn't surprised, Joe, because I think we were talking about this last week, right? I mean, this is typically what coaches do in the NHL when things aren't working. Now remember, they went into that game Saturday night 2-6 since the All-Star break, right? So, I mean, things had not been going their way in a very light month of February. So typically when things, and then you have the clunker that we've already talked about in Seattle. So this is what happens. Coaches start shuffling things around, and they moved Janot up to this, but you could tell John Hines was, in fact, I think he told you guys, right? That you could tell he wasn't comfortable with that move. He didn't want to break up the third line. So, in fact, I even alluded to that on pregame on Saturday night. I was like, I just kind of feel like Janot's going to go back to the third line. I listened to the interview with you guys, and I was like, it didn't sound like the head coach was too fond of moving him up, but this is what you do. You're looking for a spark. You're looking to get things going. You're looking for, that jump start, and there's another jump start. But we've seen this before. Does it have staying power? Yes, Joe, as long as they keep winning. And then when losing games, they'll start tinkering again. I mean, that's just life in the NHL. So I really wasn't that surprised by it. I think what's interesting is, Duchesne is red hot now, 4 goals in the last 2 games, and just the production they're getting out of the third and fourth lines. But right now, they have to keep their foot on the gas, right? I mean, they can't let up. I mean, these other teams are not going away, and so it'll make for a fun race down the stretch.
That was Darren McFarland from earlier this morning on Robbie and Rex Road. So certainly going to be interesting to see how the Predators handle the lineup as they come down the stretch here. And as I said, we are 2 weeks away from the day from the NHL trading deadline. So we will have you locked and loaded here on Preds Insiders with all things NHL trade deadline. Obviously, Philip Forsberg and his contract going to have a great deal to do with that and how the Predators operate on that front as it comes to the deadline. So we'll see what happens on that front. It is go time in terms of negotiations between Philip Forsberg and the Nashville Predators. So coming down the stretch run, I know they've been working on that for a while, but I would expect conversations to start to heat up and to be a little bit more serious coming down the stretch here with only 2 weeks before the deadline. And then can the Predators sustain? I mean, they've been honestly relatively fortunate compared to some other teams this year based on the injuries. Now, last year, I think they had more injuries than anybody in the league. So sometimes it evens out a little bit, but can you keep some bodies healthy? Do you have enough depth coming down the stretch here if you're the Predators to sustain this playoff race and to get yourself into a playoff spot? I mean, you're in one right now. You got to hold on to it. Hopefully you can advance and climb the ladder a little bit if you're the Predators. Maybe a veteran D-man on the trade market could be something that David Poile takes a look at. Maybe it's somebody to come in and play with Ryan Johansson, and you can reunite Forsberg with Granlund and Duchesne. I don't know exactly how the Predators are going to handle it coming down the stretch. Maybe it's as simple as you stand pat at the deadline. You're not mortgaging any future assets to help with this team. You see what you have. You let the young players take over and then go from there. By the way, Philip Tomasino right now on a 4-game point streak. So he's playing really well, getting rewarded for his chances offensively right now. Some of them didn't go in earlier this year. Tomasino starting to change his luck around a little bit on the offensive side of things. So maybe that makes you think differently if you're David Poile coming down the stretch. Regardless, it's going to be very fascinating to see how the Predators handle this week, starting tomorrow against the Dallas Stars. That's going to do it for us today here on Preds Insiders. Hope everybody has a wonderful rest of their Monday night here in Nashville. Stay safe out there. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Talk to you next week here on Preds Insiders. You're listening to Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.